Well, good evening and welcome. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com, and today is Thursday, January 16th, 2014. And I'm very happy to have back as my guest, author and social commentator, Harold Covington. Harold, how are you, sir?
Pretty good.
Well, good. It's been a while since we've had you on, and just wanted to have you back and see what you think of things. How are things progressing?
Improving. We are actually starting to get a noticeable increase in the number of people who are arriving here in the Northwest homeland and leaving the politically correct and diverse cesspits of the rest of the country and coming here to what is one of the definitely better parts of the country to live in. It's not anywhere near where it should be. It's still just a trickle, but it's a much stronger trickle than it was this time a year ago. So I've actually been occupied with dealing with, like I say, an increase in migration here, and that is certainly an encouraging sign.
Well, let's back up for a minute, because I don't know if all the listeners are familiar. I've had you on before, but you've written a series of novels called the Northwest series of novels. It's really about people, white people primarily, but actually exclusively, who decided that they were sick of the political correct environment in the United States. They were sick of the welfare state and supporting minorities. They were sick of the illegal immigration issues. They were sick of the influence of the Jewish bankers and all that, and decided to break away and divorce themselves from what is the rest of the United States and create their own nation state that was with its own sovereign. And they had to do so through acts of violence and revolution. And that's what the books were about. That you're actually encouraging people to move to the Northwest, I think is extremely encouraging, because I look at like places like Detroit or East St. Louis and Atlanta. You don't even want to go there.
Yeah. I can't understand how anybody can remain in certain parts of the rest of this country. I mean, New Jersey, my God. But people are waking up. I can see signs here that the message is slowly beginning to get out. It is very slow because the Northwest Front, which is our political arm, is still totally blacked out in the mainstream media. But there is a definite upward trend in, like I say, in the number of inquiries we're getting. The quality of those inquiries is very high. We're getting serious people now, and we're getting some serious people coming to the Northwest, not just tattooed skinheads, not that there's anything necessarily wrong with a skinhead, but we're getting professional people, and we're getting people who are not just coming here to get away from something, but who are pretty serious in their commitment to not just make a better life for themselves, but to make a better life for all of our race, all of our people, and fulfill the 14 words of David Lane. We must secure the existence of our people and the future of white children. And so I'm a lot more encouraged than I was even this time last year.
Well, I think you got some good points, because people are coming to the Northwest, like you said, not to run away from something, but to build a future. Mm-hmm. And here's what's becoming obvious. For a long time, white people in particular accepted the fact that, well, blacks were a little different. Hispanics, Mexicans are a little different. But they were okay because they were a minority and they didn't behave badly. Well, as they're growing in their numbers and they're growing in their political power, you're finding that blacks in particular are really, really hate white people.
Oh,
and
yeah.
These acts of violence that they're committing are savage and brutal, and they're happening on a wider and wider scale. And if any, God forbid, any white guy ever defends himself against, black thugs, he's vilified. I mean, I'll never forget what happened to poor Bernie Getz. And these guys were armed with deadly weapons. They had sharpened screwdrivers. And he pulled out a .38 and plugged them and, killed them dead. And he walked away, didn't get caught, turned himself in weeks later, and they crucified that guy.
I think last time I was on, we talked about something called the knockout game. It was just getting started. And that has continued, of course, since we last spoke. But I noticed that the one individual that has actually been arrested on hate crime charges, et cetera, and I don't know what the story is here, but the one individual actually arrested for playing the knockout game is a white man who allegedly tried to knock out a black. This game, as the blacks call it, is spreading at least all over the East Coast, and there have been literally hundreds of incidents of this type, and yet the one public arrest that's been made has been that of a white man.
Well, people have got to wake up and start realizing that the system is out to destroy the white race. That's how it seems. I mean, maybe it's true, maybe it isn't, but it certainly gives the impression that the deck is stacked against white people. Things like affirmative action, where you have less thans who get hired over the more qualified. These things are not good. And have they achieved the social results that were hoped for within that community, the black community, who needed a hand up, who needed to be pushed ahead to the front of the line? has it achieved that goal? And the answer is, I don't think it has, because you look at the performance of these, any organization that employs affirmative action as one of their policies, and what used to be a functional, highly efficient organization is now not, and because the blacks just can't get it done.
Well, for a long time, the battle cry of the so-called civil rights movement was that we want equal opportunity for blacks and Hispanics and so forth and so on, and that's not really it. It's now coming out that what they want is not equality of opportunity, they want equality of results, which is impossible to obtain because blacks and other races simply are not up to the task of running and maintaining a complex technological and social organization such as the United States of America. This is one of the reasons why in South Africa the ANC has had sense enough to retain a few million pet white people as kind of a technocratic elite to actually keep things going over there, keep the plumbing and the electricity going and so forth and so on. But the simple fact is that when the playing field is level, blacks just can't hack it because they are not the same as white people. They do not have the same cognitive abilities. They do not have the same creativity. They do not have the same level of intelligence. And it is genetic. It is biological. It can't be overcome by any amount of education. This is how you get teachers having fraud parties in big cities like Atlanta and Philadelphia and everywhere to try and get the test scores up for their classes, because basically their students cannot pass these tests honestly. And so it's like the entire affirmative action thing. The only way that blacks can even come up to affirmative action standards is by cheating, because they just simply don't have the chops for it. And this is a matter of nature. I don't know if you ever read a book called The Peter Principle, where the idea is that basically the things don't work in society, where you have a situation where everybody is promoted to their level of incompetence and then they stay there. Which is true as far as it goes, but the trouble with affirmative action and all these racial set-asides is that it not only promotes these blacks and these browns and these women who really don't have the ability to do these jobs, it not only promotes them to their level of incompetence, but it promotes them several levels beyond that. So what you get is a case of super incompetence, and you can see this in the way that the United States of America is falling apart in every respect.
Well, let me address an issue here, because you look at, industry, private industry, and if you have over, 50, 100 employees, you have to employ affirmative action. You have to hire according to what the racial mix of your environment is, of your local jurisdiction. And you look at the global playing field that we're on, and you look at Japan is a racially homogenous country. China is more racially homogenous than we are, but they still have different minorities, although very, very small. And you look at, this global playing field that our business is supposed to compete in, and it's no wonder they want to export our jobs offshore, because they don't have to deal with this nonsense and get sued. And God forbid, if a black ever gets fired for incompetence, you got to be a racist to fire that black for incompetence. You know, they ain't no incompetent blacks out there.
Yeah, well, affirmative action actually got me a few jobs way back in the day, many, many years ago. I always had trouble, not only because of my political and racial activism record, but various other reasons. Being white and male certainly didn't help, and then as age started creeping up on me, that the age discrimination factor set in. But I used to get a lot of jobs working in various clerical and administrative positions through temp agencies, and stripped of all the verbiage, what they would hire me for and what they would send me to a company for would be, in essence, to follow around some affirmative action employee, a black, or in some cases a woman, or in some cases a Mexican, and in essence redo all his work and check his work and basically keep him from screwing up. For some reason, they always seem to put the worst blacks in shipping and receiving. I don't know. For some reason, I think they figured that they do the least damage there. But I actually got many, many months cumulative work, in essence, cleaning up after affirmative action employees. So in that sense, it at least helped a white man. But if you know anyone who works in corporate America, virtually every competent white individual, male or female, who works in corporate America or in government departments has a fund of horror stories about what these incompetent minorities are doing to their company or their department and the waste, the gumming up of the works in general. And
just the gross inefficiencies.
Yeah, a whole society cannot continue like this forever. I'm always amazed at the sheer resilience of American society and the American economy. I'm surprised that we haven't collapsed long ago. I think this country is just so big and so rich, and our productive white minority, as we are now, are so productive and so creative and so hardworking that we've been able to carry the weight, like Atlas with the weight of the world on our shoulders. But eventually, Atlas is going to, he's not going to shrug, he's going to collapse because
he's gonna tire and stumble.
Keep this up. And for the first time in a long time, I personally am seeing myself some signs that we might be reaching the point in this country where one little straw somewhere, somehow, is going to break the camel's back. I don't know what it will be, probably something to do with the economy. But at some point, this entire country is going to slip and fall, and it won't be able to get up.
Well, I just see that. But let's go back to corporate America a little bit, because I've got a close friend who works in a medium-sized large company, you know, $9 billion, $10 billion in revenue, something along those lines. And this is a vice presidential level, you know, guy. And what he says his company's done to meet their racial quotas is they've put all their blacks in the same department. Mm-hmm. And make sure it's a very low-valued department. It's a department they have to have. But the work there is not within their core competency. They put all the blacks in the one department so they can you can open up their employment records and say, well, look, X percentage of our workforce is black, and so we're compliant, we're meeting our goals. But they put them all in the same department, so they all interact with each other and don't interact with the regular productive employees. They put their best and brightest black guy in charge, and it's his job to get them to work.
Yeah, lots of luck with that. Eventually, of course, I'm sure the blacks have already noticed that that's what's being done, and eventually somebody's going to start griping and moaning and file some kind of civil rights lawsuit just over that. And, of course, now this company, and like all other companies, they've got Obamacare to throw into the mix, so that's going to create more wreckage.
Well, it will. And the thing of it is, the Civil Rights Acts of 1964 and 5, they really need to be reexamined, because have they, I talk about this on the show all the time. I look at things like NAFTA and GATT. I look at the war on drugs, and let's look at civil rights. And have those laws achieved their goals? Because none of the programs I mentioned really have achieved their goals. None of them do. They're stated to do one thing, and they end up doing something entirely different. Ross Perot was right about NAFTA, that giant sucking sound. We've lost so much industry in this country. The war on drugs should be called the Drug Cartel Price Protection Act. You know, the Civil Rights Act hasn't done anything to help anybody.
I remember 1964, I was young at the time, but in our school classes, we were debating and talking about the Civil Rights Act, 1964, 65, whatever it was, and that was supposed to just solve everything. The general idea was that if we pass this one law, then America will be beautiful again, and everything will be sunshine and roses and baskets of goodies and all this sort of stuff. And nothing seems to work, because all of this rubbish is based on a false premise, which is that the races are equal, and they are not. And, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig until it's just covered with lipstick, but it's still a pig. And, you know, you can't create a society that is based on a inversion of natural law.
Well, more and more young people that I talk to, and I had a young man as a guest on the show a few weeks back, a guy named Joe Adams. And Joe's comment on this is, he goes, look, you know, my parents, when I was a kid, they didn't get along. They decided to get divorced. Blacks and whites don't get along. Why don't we go through an amicable divorce? We split the property. You go here, I'll live there, and we're done. Good luck. You're on your own.
Never happened, because the Democrats need the blacks to stay in power. There is an entire industry and an entire political establishment in this country that is based on exploiting black rage and black grievance and a sense of black entitlement, etc., etc. That will never happen, because the Democrats need the blacks to be herded to the polls every election day and vote them back into power.
Well, it's, you know, it's time to, and I talked to this other young man, Joe. He's smart young man. I really like
him. Yeah, I
know
Joe. Yep.
And, you know, he talks about your theory, and that is that it's time to break the country up and, you know, just say, we don't care. You're on your own. We're out of here and we're leaving. And if you try to stop us, you're going to meet some resistance and violence.
Well, this may be pushing the envelope a little bit, but there is no way that this existing power structure is going to allow anyone to opt out or leave the system, because, like I say, so I think they're smart enough to realize that they have to have white people involved just to keep things running, like I said. We get all this secessionist talk about, you know, the state of Jefferson in Northern California and all these 10 counties in Colorado that want to secede and so forth and so on. And I'm sorry to tell them it's just not going to happen, because basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to create more red states. And if they got their own statehood, that would be two more Republicans in the Senate and in the House. And they would alter the balance of power that the Democrats have been whittling down for many years through the creation of their own massive national underclass that will keep on voting them into power. It's kind of like Boss Tweed and Mayor Daley writ large on a national scale. And right now the Democrats have the power, and I'm personally of the opinion that one way or the other they're just not going to hand it over. Right now I know all the neoconservatives and the Republicans and all the other conservative types are chomping at the bit going for the 2014 elections, and they say, yeah, this time we're going to get them, this time we're, and I just don't think so, because the simple fact is that normal people are now outnumbered at the polls. If you factor in what Rush Limbaugh calls the low information voters, which is a polite term for the white dumbass vote, normal, productive, hardworking white Americans, as you and I understand the term, are now outnumbered. We are now a political minority, and in this first past the post electoral system we've got, we're completely powerless. I am personally of the opinion that however congressional elections go, this country will never again see another white heterosexual male president, because we have lost the demographic battle, and the only way that we can win the demographic battle is by reducing the problem to manageable parameters. In other words, we're going to have to pick a part of the country. We advocate the Pacific Northwest here in the Northwest Front, and we are going to have to concentrate all our effort there. We are going to have to build a national consciousness, and we are going to have to break away from this entire putrid system and establish our own sovereign nation here on the North American continent, if there is to be any hope that the white race will physically survive, because we are talking about genocide here. If we don't do something, then a century from now, there's not going to be any more people on this continent that look like you and me.
Well, Harold, I hear our break music coming up right now, so hang on. We'll be back in a couple minutes, folks. More with author and political commentator, Harold Covington. I'm stuttering. Be right back, folks. Stick with us. This is Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com, and today is Thursday, January 16, 2014. My guest this evening is Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Okay.
The topic before the break was that of genocide, and you know that's a mighty tough word for people to get their minds around, because
it's an accurate one.
Well, but most people in this country, let me just, you know, grew up, people your age, my age, anybody who's over 40 grew up with this idea that we're a white country, we're always going to be a white country, and our position here is unassailable, and this is our birthright. And we find that we have 50 million illegal aliens living in the country. We've got blacks who never worked for four and five generations, who feel entitled to never have to work because somebody's great-grandpa was a slave once, maybe, maybe not. We're importing 125,000 immigrants from Somalia and other third world dung heaps into this country every month. And, you know, it's the numbers are adding up. And, you know, these immigrants who come here legally, like the Somalis or Nigerians or whatever others are coming here, they're entitled to full vote right. I mean, them and their grandchildren will never work as long as this system stays in place the way it is. And one of the things that why I invite you on is because you're one of the few people who's ever articulated a possible plan. You know, for to go and fight in the political trenches to turn this around, and to get the liberals and the Jews to think any other way than what they think. is next to impossible. It's easier just to break away and say, you know, you have people of like mind come to the Pacific Northwest or whatever other locale. See, personally, I think you're asking for too little space. I think we should ask for at least a third of the country, if not more.
Well, the scenarios that I describe in my novels take a certain tack. They're based on the IRA, which I personally witnessed when I was living in Ireland. But it's not necessarily the way that things are going to go. I try to lay out in the book certain basic ideas and principles, but things might not go the way that I describe in my book. There might not be a guerrilla war, for example. It might be one big, huge Soviet-style collapse, and it could well be that at the last minute some of the state and local officials will step up to the plate, although I'm not too confident in anyone who's been turned out by this political system. But there's all kinds of ways that it could happen. The point is, it's going to happen. The historical signs are all there. The United States is not long for this world in historical terms. And so the question is, how do we deal with it? At some point in time, there is going to be a division of this continent in between the different racial groups and the special interest groups and this sort of stuff. Blacks, I'm sorry to say, probably will get a large part of the South for the Republic of New Africa. The Mexicans are going to have their Aztlan in Southwest America. And the question is, what portion of the pie will the white man take? Now, in the Northwest Front, we are preparing for that day. We already have, at least on paper, something that could be put in the place of the old system. We have a constitution. I've just completed the fifth edition of our party's manual, which gets a little bit more into this. But what we're trying to create right now here in the homeland itself is at least the beginnings of a political organization, a national independence movement that, when the time comes, will be ready to step forward and to fill the gap that is left by the collapse of the United States, which, I repeat, will happen in one form or another, most likely through something economic, although it could be something else. There could still be an insane war with Iran that cuts off
Iran's not going to go that way. I've been working very hard to divert that, and we finally have some peace talks in place with Iran, and I've been advocating this for a long time, that we need to normalize relationships with Iran, because it'll take the price of oil down from, you know, $3.50 a gallon up here in the Northwest down to about $1.39, you know, in days.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Now, in the summer of 2012, I was really worried, but the trouble is, you still got that Israeli wild card, and you still got that kook Netanyahu in charge in Tel Aviv, and he is quite capable, in my opinion, of just saying, hey, nuts with this, screw Obama, screw America, we're just going to go bomb these Persians, and we're going to kick over the table. And the Israelis believe that if they do that, when push really does come to shove, even Obama won't have the necessary political will to just leave Israel to its fate. I don't think any American president could or would. So Israel still does have what you might call the bomber's veto. The question is, will they use it? But I think the reason that those peace talks are proceeding right now is because somebody in the Pentagon pulled Obama to the side and said, hey, Barry, we got to have a talk. I don't believe that the United States military right now is capable of defeating the Iranians, and I think somebody in the Pentagon realizes that and told Obama, hey, look, you know, we can't go off on another Middle Eastern war here against a country and a power the size of Iran. So that threat, I agree, has somewhat receded, but then you've got all of this other, like, massive unemployment. That's just not, never mind the economic aspects of it. That's just not a good idea.
97 million Americans of working age are currently or underemployed right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a record high number. But our Department of Labor just reported that unemployment is down to 7.8%.
But those figures are useless.
Well, it is. It's through statistical manipulation. If they were going to use the numbers, the same metrics that were used back in 1980 when Reagan became president, our unemployment rate would be 23-24%. And nobody wants to admit what the truth is. Well, you can't fix problems until you acknowledge what the problem really is. And that's one thing that's going on in Washington. And people are really frustrated with how Washington has sold itself to corporate interests instead of representing what's in the best good of the American people.
It certainly doesn't help that those millions of illegal aliens are taking up all the entry-level jobs. That's why a number of young white men and women have no choice but to go into the military. If they grew up in some little town in Iowa or Wisconsin or
Well, that's precisely the point. They can go into the military. They can be genocided over there. They come home crippled. They come home full of depleted uranium or some other toxin that they're exposed to in theater of combat over there.
And it all happened because there was no entry-level jobs over here for them because the blasted Mexicans took them all.
Well, that's the point. And, you know, I, for one, advocate deporting all illegals, not just the Mexicans, but the Chinese and the Hondurans and any other illegal that doesn't belong in this country. And I'll even go one step farther. If we catch you and deport you, and if we have to kick you out, I want to cut off their left thumb so that it gives them something to remember to never come back. Because we don't need them here. We've got 97 million Americans underemployed or unemployed. Why do we need 50 million illegal aliens here? Whatever, that would reduce our unemployment, our unemployed indigenous Americans here by half. It would take care of half the problem.
Well, it's like I said, it's all those Democrat votes. And by the way, California and some other places, I am sure that they're already voting.
Oh, you know they are. They're voting in Arizona already, too. They get on the news and they brag about it. They brag about how they got to vote and influence an election being a foreign national in this country. Anyway, Harold, here's our next break coming up. We'll be right back in a couple minutes, folks. More with author Harold Covington. Mike Harris on RentsRadio.com. Today is Thursday, January 16th. I'm on with author Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where do you want to go from here? What do you want to talk about next? Because we have a caller who wants to chime in if you want to take a call.
Oh, sure.
Well, let's go ahead and welcome our caller, Frank. Frank, welcome to the show, sir.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen, Mike and Mr. Covington. I had to call and chime in because we're talking about the Democratic Party, and we're talking about the blacks and the illegals and all that. And I understand that the Democratic Party has been instrumental in this every bit of the way, there's no doubt. But it's like I fell down the rabbit hole about 8 or 9 years ago, and I used to hear all these people saying all these things, these hateful, mean things, not just about blacks or illegal aliens, stuff like that. That's one of the reasons I woke up, by the way. I heard these reports from people that were down on the border, the southern border, right after 9/11, and they kept talking about how all these people were coming in droves by the hundreds of thousands every day over the border, and the media was not covering it. And I was being told by Fox News and all these Republicans and so-called conservatives that we were under the threat of an attack at any time, but they were not talking about that. And they were doing everything they could to sabotage any efforts to secure that border. I'm going to tell you something. The Jewish people hate America. The Jewish community hates America. The Jewish people hate Christians. They don't. They can't. They only make up 2% of the population, so they cannot come out and act. They can't openly say that. That would be like walking into a black bar at midnight and with a Ku Klux Klan outfit. They can't come out and say it. The blacks get their power. The illegal aliens are able to get out in the streets by the hundreds of thousands only because the Jews give them the okay to do so. Otherwise, all bets would be off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm very, very hip to the Jewish question. Don't worry. As you will see when you read my novels, the Jews are definitely featured very prominently in there. The problem is that we've let them do it. The central cause of the collapse of Western civilization and the loss of America is the white man's weakness, his confusion, the fact that we have allowed ourselves to be transmuted into video game playing geeks. I really don't know where to begin, but yeah, the Jew is part of the problem for sure. You can't discuss the collapse of Western civilization without talking about Jews any more than you can discuss disease without talking about germs. But unfortunately, there's plenty of blame to go around. Whites have been taught over a period of generations to hate themselves, to hate their own culture, to hate their own heritage.
And absolutely.
We've become herd animals. And it's not like white people can't be brave anymore. I mean, we have soldiers and police and firefighters who commit brave acts every day, but it's like the white man has to have a permission slip from the Jews in order to be brave and to do these great deeds of the kind that our ancestors did. We have a saying that I put in our party literature sometimes. War is when you let the government tell you who the enemy is. Revolution is when you decide for yourself. We have lost the ability to decide for ourselves who the enemy is. And the first requirement for any solution to this crisis, this existential crisis, this genocide that we're facing, is for the white man to learn once again to stand for himself, to think for himself, to decide for himself who the enemy is. We have to cease being herd animals and once more become predators as our ancestors were. That's a bit of an oversimplification, but I think you can grasp what I mean.
Well, I would end my call with this. It's a very simple point. I'm sure everybody can understand what I'm saying. If the white man, the white race, does not stand up for itself, who else is going to? I'm going to tell you something. Nobody. We're gone.
We are in very real danger of extinction within a century and a half. Slowly, I think we are finally starting to get this idea percolating into our skulls full of mush. But it's just too damn slow. We are going to have to face this crisis at some point in time, and we are going to have to learn to act as white people, not as Americans, not as Christians, not as any of these little subgroups, but we are going to have to acquire a sense of racial nationhood. The motto on the Northwest Front's party seal is, "Our race is our nation," and that is what we have to instill in our own people. That is what the white man must come to realize, that our race is our nation. It is who we are. Racism is the purest form of patriotism because it cuts to the essence of who we are, what we have done, our past, our present, and our future.
Well, I would just say to anyone out there listening, this may sound radical, all this and whatnot, and I understand I was there once upon a time too, but think about it. Who? If the white race does not stand up for itself in this time going forward, let me tell you something. Nobody else is going to. You are going to be spat upon. You are going to be put in cages. You're going to be used as slaves and everything else. And I appreciate the time, gentlemen.
Okay. Well, thank you, Greg. Thanks for the call.
And Harold, of all the races on the earth, the white race is the only race that is in danger of extinction. Not the blacks, not the browns, not the Asians. We are the only people on the face of the earth who are in danger of disappearing from the face of the earth.
Well, that is a very profound comment, and it goes back to your earlier theme of genocide, and we're down to 8%. So what people don't realize is that at the end of World War II, we were 33% of the global population was white. Currently, we're down to 8% of the global population being white, with 3% being women of reproductive age.
Mm-hmm. And that
3% is under assault every day. There's a black man who's trying to get a white woman. There's a Mexican trying to get a white. Every day it goes on. And it's time that white people woke up and started to really defend their own people, defend their heritage, defend their race. We got here through tens and thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of our forebears. And I just can't sit still and let it all get snuffed out in the next 100 years. So, Harold, tell us where people can get your books, because I really want to promote
your
book.
We are the Northwest Front. Our website is www.northwestfront, that's all one word, northwestfront.org. And you can email me at nwnet@earthlink.net and order my novels off Amazon, off of Libris.com, Barnes & Noble, etc., etc. But the first step is to check out that website. Everything you need to know is on there, including a copy of our draft constitution for the Northwest American Republic. And get in touch, and we will set you on the trail northwest.
Well, let me just first give an endorsement of your books. I've read all five of them, and I found them to be just a fun read. It's action. It's adventure. It's betrayal. It's treason. It's intrigue. It's excitement. It's shootouts. It's clandestine behaviors, it's romance, It's got it all, folks. It has it all. It's true love. It's a love story. There's a number of love stories woven into this thing. There is something for everybody in these books. And like I said, they're a fun read, and they're credible. You read the books and you say, you know, I could see that happening. Then as you keep reading them, about the second or third, you say, boy, I really hope this starts soon, because enough's enough.
The mother of some of our people here picked up a copy of The Brigade that they had, and she started leafing through it. She read part of it, and she looked up at our comrades, and she said, is this real? Not yet. That's our standard answer.
Well, they're written as works of fiction, but I mean, folks, if you want to take a book to the beach, I mean, and read, or wherever you go, on an airplane ride, whatever, they're just fun books to read. I highly recommend that you get yourself all five of them. Just start out with one, and you will see what I'm talking about, because they're fun to read. And, you know, Harold's a good writer, and they're just outstanding entertainment. And you're going to learn something. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to identify with the people in there, because they see the same problems that you're seeing today, except they see it 10, 20 years from now, magnified by 100. So anyway, Harold, what the commentary do you have for us? We've got a couple minutes left. I don't think we have very much time.
Okay. I was waiting for the bumper music, but I have my own podcast, as you know. I don't know if you listen to it regularly, and it's called Radio Free Northwest. You can listen to it off of our website, download it from there, and actually listen to it on our site. And I play Marian music and that sort of stuff that a lot of people like. But I tell people who ask me, how can I, you know, devote my life to this apparently hopeless cause and beat my head against the wall? And I tell people that guys like you and me, Mike, we do what we do not because we hope to win, not because we hope to get anything out of it, but because it is right. And if we can just get more white people to stand up and do what they know in their hearts is right, which they become afraid to do, but if we can break that fear and we can get our people to do right, we will win.
But you're right, and folks, you have to do it yourself, because there ain't no Superman going to come and save you. So, all right, Harold, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Have a great night, everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow. So everybody take care. All right, bye-bye.